there. Good morning. I'm John Adarola. Just kidding. I'm not. Do you ever? I'm here sitting next to Brett. Do you know how that?
We should have played that I was John Adarola.
We should have. But obviously, John is not here.
Good.
He's on a much needed vacation. Not much needed?
No, it absolutely is needed.
I think so.
Although he has been tweeting quite feverishly about politics.
Go
and whatnot.
Away, boy.
Like, stop it.
He can never stop it. But so you've got Brooke and Brett in hardcore coming in hot this week, all week long, basically.
Yeah. Like,
there's not a day without one of us.
Yep. Is that true?
I think so, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, exactly.
Help us, God, help us.
Y'all. Exactly. No, so we got a lot going on this morning, a lot to talk about. We're talking about Jared Kushner. We're talking about Meghan Markle. Lots of Donald Trump, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker. Where's he been?
He came in hot.
It's a new Cory Booker.
At the California Democratic Convention.
Exactly. And we're going to talk to David Dennis Jr. live about the latest Central Park 5 series. It's a mini series that's out on Netflix. I watched it all in one night.
Really?
Friday.
Mm-hmm. How many episodes
is
it?
Four.
And they're all an hour?
Mm-hmm.
Good for you.
I know, right? I couldn't stop.
Just to give you an idea in the difference between how like socially aware, active, you totally dialed in with the zeitgeist versus how far from that I am.
Okay.
I binged watched like 20 episodes of HBO's Girls this weekend.
Okay. One of the greatest things, it's a great treat for yourself, is to watch Brett live discuss a series on Instagram stories. If you catch that, you'll be happy. All right, let's get started. Okay, first up today, Donald Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor Jared Kushner, he did a lot of defending the president on a lot of different topics on an interview with Axios on HBO. So let's get right into it, because I want to show you what happened when Kushner is asked whether he has seen Trump do anything racist or bigoted. Take a look.
So the answer is no, absolutely not. You can't not be a racist for 69 years, then run for president and be a racist. And what I'll say is that when a lot of the Democrats call the president a racist, I think they're doing a disservice to people who suffer because of real racism in this country.
And so I imagine you have the same reaction everyone else did watching that. Luckily, Jonathan Swan, the interviewer in this, he had a pretty good follow-up. Take a look.
Was birtherism racist?
Look, I wasn't really involved in that.
I know you weren't. Mm-hmm. Was it racist?
Like I said, I wasn't involved in that.
I know you weren't.
Mm-hmm.
Was it racist?
Look, I know who the president is, and I have not seen anything in him that is racist. So again, I was not involved in that.
Did you wish he didn't do that?
Like I said, I was not involved in that. That was a long time ago.
All right, so that's his answer to the follow-up.
I forget who did it. It might have been Sean King, who was like, there was a normal interview going on, and then right after this series of questions began, Jared forgot how to speak. Like, how to speak in complete sentences.
Right. So, because it's hard to lie.
I mean, it is obviously affecting him. Right. Jared, who I didn't think was capable of human emotions.
Right, I'm not sure.
I thought he was capable of hunger. Maybe thirst.
Okay.
Fear.
Okay.
I guess that might have been the driving factor there. But like I just break down every single thing about what happened there. First, he says that the president was not racist for 69 years, nice, or however long it was.
Right.
And then suddenly is racist.
Right, but
but he has been racist.
Just like refusing to cop to that. So was that racist? I wasn't a part of it. That's not what I asked you. You just claimed to know everything about this man for the past 69 years.
Yeah.
So were you there or were you not?
Let's be honest, you know he's racist. He says racist stuff.
Every single day, absolutely.
He's that kind of guy. And then he says it does a disservice to people who have suffered from actual racism, which is like an attempt at the kind of arguments that conservatives try to make in order to just confuse people. It's like using a triple negative. They're just like, I have no idea what you're saying.
Right.
But you seemed confident as you said it. But when you want to talk about people who are actual victims of racism, how about all the people that weren't allowed to move into Trump buildings because he had racist tenant policies?
Exactly. Exactly.
And what did you think of that? You saw that.
That was ridiculous. It was absolutely ridiculous. I guess I don't know how else his son-in-law is supposed to answer a yes or no question that everyone knows. Like, we have video proof. There are federal documents of what you're talking about. There's a full page ad in the New York Times in 1989. Like, we have actual proof of his racism. There's a video of him on the campaign trail. You know, so there's actual proof, but I guess I can't imagine his son-in-law answering it any other way.
Wouldn't it have been great if Jared was like, yes, thank you, finally, right, yes, he's so racist.
Right, exactly, and then he went to dinner with George Conway.
It's just with that relationship, I wonder how Trump can be okay with his daughter marrying such a wiener. Such like a limp wiener. That's what it is. And the answer is probably, he's from a big real estate family.
That's absolutely.
Who did better than mine, but he's never gonna challenge me as the dominant figure in my daughter's life.
Right.
That's, I think, this is the first time I've really been able to figure out what that relationship is like. And all his confidence in Jared. Jared might just be like an okay project manager, but never anything else.
And what we've seen over and over again is that you're okay until you're not.
With Trump?
Yeah. So who knows what the future holds?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I want to skip ahead a little bit and talk about Russia.
Okay.
Okay, because he was also asked about that infamous Russia meeting and straight up asked, why didn't you report this to the FBI? Why did you go? Why? And there was a bit of a back and forth. I want to show you here. So the question from Swan is, does it not set off some alarm bells when you see an email that the Russian government wants to help the campaign? Kushner says, the email I got on my iPhone said, show up at 4, I didn't scroll down. Swan reminds him that it had Russia in the subject line. And then still no copping to the reality of the situation is right there. You knew what the meeting was gonna be about. And so we asked him, if this happened again, would you report it to the FBI? Take a look at his answer.
Would you call the FBI if it happened again?
I don't know. It's hard to do hypotheticals, but the reality is that we were not given anything that was salacious.
This wouldn't be hard for me to do hypotheticals.
That is the precise hypothetical where you say, yes, I would, because you're hiding behind this concept that you don't know the rules.
Right.
And you're just new to this. But the hypothetical answer should be, I would report it to the FBI. It's the easiest thing to do, unless you consistently do get invites like this and just don't want to cop to that fact.
Right. You're right. Like, you know that it'll happen again and you know that you won't report it to the FBI. Otherwise, I don't see how this isn't saying yes immediately isn't a good look for the administration.
Mm-mm.
Say yes, of course we would, because we didn't know what was going on. We had nothing to do with that, so of course we would.
But he doesn't want to answer any questions whatsoever.
Right.
Just that moment when they ask about the racism.
Let's go back to it, yeah.
Yeah, just like, what would you do? I was not involved in that. So you can't make an assessment of birtherism or any racist act, whether it was racist, whether you wanted it to happen, whether you endorse it, because you weren't involved in it.
Right.
First of all, that's like the tacit acknowledgement and crappiness that allows racism to persist. Because people aren't able to just say, oh no, that was bad. It was absolutely racist. It was absolutely racially motivated. And he should just cop to that.
Right.
He can't.
Okay, so more on Donald Trump. Donald Trump is actually in the UK this morning, and it's a big UK trip. Ahead of his trip, he did an interview with UK outlet The Sun. He did the interview in the Oval Office, and he called Meghan Markle nasty. And so what's so fascinating about this is that he has now denied saying that, absolutely denied it. And there is this Twitter account called Trump's War Room that for some reason I actually didn't know existed. It's a verified account from the administration, and it's their effort to cut down on fake news. And so I want to show you a video that Trump's War Room posted in an effort to call out the fake news reports of Trump calling Meghan Markle nasty. Take a look.
She said she'd move to Canada if you got elected. Turned out she moved to Britain.
Well, that would be good. There are a lot of people moving here. So what can I say? No, I didn't know that she was nasty.
That you said it's nasty. They have nonstop denied that this happened.
Right, we have a tweet from the president saying, it's fake news, CNN. I never called Meghan Markle nasty. Made up by the fake news. That was your voice and your account posted
just like
it.
The rest of it says, and they got caught cold. No, bro, you got caught cold.
You're just blatantly lying.
This is like one of those things that's hilarious, but it is that kind of
terrifying.
Insanity. That's how fascism works. It's crowd mentality. It's that idea that if someone's getting beat up in a crowd, you just assume other people are gonna do something about it. But no, everyone assumes everyone else is gonna do something about it. The president has been so transparently in conflict with truth and lied about so much that you just kind of can't believe that everyone could go along with this. But right. But there is a good amount of America that sees that, only sees his tweets, and assume, and his framing is that everyone who's reporting everything that is in conflict with me is lying, so they'll just assume that those folks are lying.
And so he's denying calling Meghan Markle nasty. In another tweet, he called the mayor of London nasty. This happened this morning. And there's the tweet right there. He's calling him. He said he's been foolishly nasty to, in the third person, himself, the visiting president of the United States. And speaking of his visit, Buckingham Palace is reportedly unable to host the Trumps because of ongoing renovation work that began in 2016. And as the Washington Post points out, according to the official royal website, Buckingham Palace has 775 rooms, including 52 royal and guest bedrooms. So all of them are taken up after he called the Duchess of Sussex nasty.
Yeah, which is great. Because there's all these rumors that the royals aren't getting along with Meghan Markle. But this is like the most British move you can pull. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, it's under,
no
it's under renovation. You're like, where? It's a giant castle. No, you'd never believe this. I'm shocked as well. But it's under renovation and there's nothing we can do about it. Sorry, you'll have to stay at the Radisson.
The best, there's a Best Western next door. All right.
And we know you like the best.
Exactly,
so
in the West.
At the Best Western.
Exactly.
There is a continental breakfast.
We'll be right back. We've got David Dennis talking about Ava DuVernay's new series on Netflix about the Central Park Five. It's called When They See Us. Talking about it to him live. With him, to him.
Against him.
We'll be right back.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of On the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity, the UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Hey there, welcome back to The Damage Report. I'm Brooke Thomas. Brett's here too. We're filling in for John Iadarola this week. When They See Us, it's a new miniseries on Netflix by Ava DuVernay, and it documents the story of the Central Park Five. And with us joining us live this morning, we have David Dennis Jr., Senior Culture Editor of Interactive One, live on the show to talk a little bit about it. And just there's all kinds of thoughts and questions, and I think everyone is taking away something different and important from it. You're seeing actual clips of it right now. It was a powerful piece. David, good morning. Afternoon, where you
morning.
Are. Good afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Let's jump right into it. What were your thoughts watching this?
Yeah, so it was, first of all, it was very painful to watch, very hard to watch. It's four episodes. A lot of it, you know, we've seen documentaries, we've read books, we've seen a lot of different stories about the Central Park Five, or the Exonerated Five, as they are now being called. And, you know, what this show gave us was a lot of humanizing of these five figures and their parents and their families. And it showed us really the trauma and the horror that they went through. It really gave us their lives and their perspectives in a way we hadn't seen before, in a way that's really sort of revolutionary in the way that it, you know, shows humanity and five people who sort of become this racial you know, firecracker for America in the late 20th century.
Did anything about this shock you? Because I feel like for me, like a lot of people know this story, especially with who our president is now and how much he actually inserted himself in this situation. And there were still, I felt like very well educated about this story of these five boys at the time. And there was still so much about this that I didn't know specifically, and I don't want to ruin it for people, so it's not a spoiler, but there was four of the kids were treated one way and one of the kids was treated in a different way, and it's horrifying. And it's an aspect of the story that I hadn't even realized. So I wonder for you, were there any parts of this where you learned something?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we really got one of the first major detailed looks at the way that the prison industrial complex works to criminalize and harm black folks. Like, we saw that these boys, most of them below the age of 16, one was 16 at the time, that they were held in interrogation for more than 24 hours without any food, without their parents. And you see the way that people are coerced into confessions for things they did not do. And there's hundreds and thousands of people in American prisons right now, mostly black and brown men and women, who are in jail for making those same pleas. And those pleas that those kids made really is the reason that they ended up in jail, and they were innocent. They were coerced into doing that. They were bullied, they were beaten, they were lied to, and they were really forced to go to jail for something they didn't commit. And it was a really heartbreaking expose, really, on the way that police departments around this country work.
And so I want to dig a little deeper into that, because I know that you have a son. You have a son and a daughter, right?
Yes.
And so I think that a lot of black families, they talk about having the talk, and it's about generally how to interact with police officers, especially if you're the parents of a young black son. And this kind of took that a step further. I saw a lot of conversation about, like, now people are realizing that they have to talk to their kids about requesting a lawyer, about not speaking, and how to handle interrogations. Because you saw in this that nothing could have happened without these coercions. Mm. If these kids had the education, if their parents knew not to talk or to request a lawyer, it's possible none of this would have happened. They wouldn't have been able to be abused like this. Is that something that, a conversation that you already have with your son, or something that new that you now realize you have to?
Yeah, so we have sort of those basic conversations with our children about the way we interact with police. We know that, you do whatever they say. You try to comply to all their demands, and you all that stuff. But really, what this showed is that you have to have a deeper understanding of how to interact with police. You need to understand your Miranda rights. You need to understand that you need to demand a lawyer before you speak. You need to know exactly what you're signing, what your rights are. And it really showed that you need more legalese than the average person. A lot of stuff that I didn't really think about if I were in that position. So we have to have deeper conversations, and I definitely have to do that with my kids.
I want to show you a tweet, because this is a tweet from our current president, Donald Trump, but he wasn't president at the time. This is a tweet from 2013. I thought it was 2012, excuse me. So 2013, this is 6 years ago, but it is 11 years after these five men were fully exonerated, and another man not only confessed to the crime, but DNA connected him, and he had information about the crime that only the rapist would have known. Are you shocked or surprised at this? This is about an older documentary, because Ava DuVernay's piece is obviously not the first time the story has been told. What are your thoughts about Trump's connection to all this?
Yeah, so no, I'm not surprised, right, to answer your first question, that he did this. What is interesting, though, is that, we know he took out ads in all the papers in New York demanding that these five boys, not that they go to jail. He wanted them to die. He wanted them to face the death penalty. He essentially called for a lynching of five innocent teenagers. Like, these are kids at the time. And, even if they did commit a crime, I mean, you're asking them to be lynched, to be hanged for something that they, they did not do. And so it's always interesting that as Trump was running for president, that people were acting as though you know, his racism was something that was new or that was unexpected. But this is something that happened in the 80s. Like, this has been around for a long time. This is one of the things that sort of made Trump a national figure, was that his you know, announcement onto the main stage was that he called for the death penalty for five black and brown teenagers. So, you know, all the things that followed should not be surprising to anybody. I mean, this is Trump's MO.
All right, David Jennings Jr., thank you so much for joining us this morning. I think we've had you on the show a few times, but I think this is our first time being able to chat on the show. So it's been great to have you. Can't wait to talk again. Thanks so much.
All right.
All right, and we will be right back.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is locked in an epic battle with presidential candidate John Delaney. It hasn't been a good last few days for John Delaney. He had a great time here on the Young Turks, where he was last Friday doing a postgame. Check that out for members in the conversation. But John Delaney went to the California Democratic Convention and gave a speech in which he mentioned Medicare for all, and it did not go well.
But we need, as Democrats, to build an economy that works, but it's got to be with smart policies. Medicare for all may sound good, but it's actually not good policy, nor is it good politics. I'm telling you. 100.
That did not go well. So that was John Delaney at the California Democratic Convention. And he went on right after that moment of getting booed for what essentially was a full minute. And you couldn't really hear him through the boos as he said this. We should have universal health care, but it shouldn't be the kind of health care that kicks 150 million Americans off their health care. That's not smart policy. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez chimed in and said this. Since there's so many people running for president and not enough for Senate, instead of obsessing over who's a front runner, maybe we can start with some general eliminations. This awful, untrue line got booed for a full minute. John Delaney, thank you, but please sashay away. He responded, but I would like to hear you respond.
I just choose this emoji.
Yeah, get out.
No, I mean, she's right. Listen, John Delaney's not gonna be our next president of the United States. Everyone knows that, I get it, and it's really awful. You're like, anything could happen, but not really.
John.
So it's like, you don't blow your job that you have now and like what you could be doing for the country.
John Delaney is one of the wealthiest people in America, but he's like millions and millions and millions of dollars. But I'm not really as bothered by his statement about Medicare for all, the initial clip we just played, as I am by the thing I read where he was essentially
said, backs it up with more bad advice.
Yeah, he said we should have universal healthcare, but it shouldn't be the kind of healthcare that kicks 150 million Americans off healthcare. That is just already losing the rhetorical debate and utterly giving up on it.
It's also a scare tactic that it doesn't have fact. Like, I want everyone to have healthcare, but I don't want to kick people off of healthcare. So wait, that's not even that. Those two things don't even belong together.
Right. Well, yes.
It's a scare tactic. Exactly. It doesn't give the full story of what you're saying.
A lot of Democratic candidates are starting to do this. There's a huge backing for Medicare for all. It polls extraordinarily well when you ask people, would you like Medicare for all? Because everybody loves Medicare. I mean, by and large, it's like polls at 80-something percent among people who have it. And this is the idea that you would expand it. But a lot of the candidates are now coming in and saying, I want Medicare for all who want it. Because, and I think this is the answer, the unions are a giant voting bloc. And one of the reasons that unions can get so much support is because they're the ones who provide healthcare. You get that union thing. I know, like, if you're in the Screen Actors Guild, you get like amazing health insurance. But rather than pitch,
it's all right.
Listen, we're still going to have protections for unions outside of your health insurance. We still need unions. Don't worry about it. And we're going to alleviate that financial burden from unions and put it so that everyone can have access to really good health care.
And as someone who has paid into like insurance from SAG, I don't care where the insurance comes from. I don't feel like Well, it's almost like it reminds me of the minimum wage argument. Well, mm-hmm. I went to school, and so I'm a paramedic, and I don't think someone who works at McDonald's should make as much money as me. I don't care that they can't live. I just don't think, the idea that I lose some of the prestige of what my job means if someone who I feel is beneath me makes as much as me.
Yeah.
And maybe you need to make more, but
this is completely outside of that.
It just reminds me of that, as if this insurance is not good enough. So we paid into this, so we want to keep this. We deserve this.
Yes, that is. There are a bunch of different versions of Medicare for All.
Right.
What he is trying to pitch is essentially this Heritage Foundation Obamacare thing, where you just kind of expand certain coverages, but you don't get around the fact that, listen, we have a private insurance system here in America. And whether you like the concept of that or not, we pay twice as much for our healthcare and have worse results than everyone else who has a system more similar to the Medicare for All system. That's what's very frustrating about this. John Delaney responded to AOC saying, "Hey AOC, we have the same goal, universal healthcare for everyone. We just have different ways of getting there. Healthcare is the number one issue for voters, so let's debate the way forward. Any show of your choosing, healthcare is too important for tweets. We need real discussion."
I mean, you can have a real discussion on Twitter. It's 2019. It's just where we are now.
But yeah.
See what he's saying. I don't know.
It's funny, given that Michael Starr Hopkins' press secretary said this. The only person Congresswoman AOC helped with her tweet about Congressman Delaney was Donald Trump. If Democrats are serious about beating the president at the ballot box, we need less political grandstanding and more truth-telling from the Bernie wing of the party. So that is a very boring, sad, but what is Amy Klobuchar approach, where it's just like, I am going to be the moderate, party moderate.
I feel like one could argue that running for president when you know you're not going to win helps Donald Trump. I don't know.
It's weird, because later it says 2016 should have taught us if we allow this primary to become a popularity contest on Twitter rather than a debate of ideas in the public square, the country will lose. We've seen this playbook before, and it ends with a second term for Donald Trump. It's like, well, guess what? The person who went for the popularity contest ended up winning the presidency.
And I've always said this, I don't believe everyone who has entered the race for president thinks they are going to win. I think a lot of it is to gain popularity. It's a business thing. So it's like, maybe he'll be our next president.
I don't know. He's polling at 0.5% right now. Someone who is polling slightly better is Cory Booker. Cory Booker was at the same convention, and wouldn't you know it, at the California Democratic Convention, Cory Booker, who you haven't really heard much from in a while, came alive. Take a listen to his speech.
I want to tell you what this election is really about. It is not about one guy in one office. It is about a referendum on who we are and who we must be to each other. Beating Donald Trump is a must. Beating Donald Trump is a must, but that is a floor, not a ceiling. We are bigger than that. We have greater ambitions than that. Well, I say it's our generation's turn to dream America anew again. It's time for us to have big dreams and defiant dreams, that everyone has health care, that every public school is funded, that we can be a nation where work has dignity. Let us dream again big and do the work together to take us to the mountaintop. Thank you very much. God bless you. Thank you, California.
Let me tell you, this is a restart of a campaign if I ever saw one.
Yeah.
Yes.
He came alive. Michael Schur was there for the Young Turks, and he said, in the hall today, Cory Booker was a different candidate than the one I last saw a few months ago. This passion has been missing, and it worked today with this crowd. He's at 2.5% in the polls.
Wow.
Yeah. Do you like Cory Booker?
I do like Cory Booker. There was a docu-series when he was mayor of Newark, and I learned a lot about Newark and a lot about, the lives of people who live in Newark, and I liked him. I thought he completely just shined, and I like Cory Booker. I like him in congressional hearings. I like him. His campaign has been interesting.
One of the things I learned about Cory Booker quite a while ago was that he ran into a burning building to save someone when he was mayor of Newark.
He also lived in public housing.
Yeah?
Yeah, intentionally.
He's also a Stanford grad.
Right.
Caught the touchdown pass. I'm just saying, I should like him. But there always has been this energy to Cory Booker. I would call him a duck.
What do you mean?
A duck is very calm on the top of the surface, but below the surface, their legs are kicking like crazy. Whenever I see Cory Booker, like you would see Kamala nail it in those hearings, and you'd see Cory behind like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
But then you'd see him and he was just trying so damn hard, and where like Kamala's performance would be effortless. You know, even Klobuchar would just be like, sit there and kind of nail someone.
Uh-huh.
But Cory, I just feel like he's trying so hard.
That's so interesting.
I think he needs to relax into it. But this kind of speech was really strong. And Michael Shore was in the room and can confirm it. Yeah. Anyways, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more developments in the USS John McCain. Oops, sorry. I said McCain. I just triggered the
somebody
president.
Put a tarp over him.
We'll be back. All right, so there's been a lot of he said about whether the White House or the Navy was responsible for trying to hide the presence of the USS John McCain during the president's Memorial Day visit to Japan. Well, this is what Rear Admiral Charlie Brown, not making that upset about it. A request was made to the US Navy to minimize the visibility of the USS John McCain. However, all ships remain in their normal configuration during the president's visit. So that is a Rear Admiral saying, listen, the White House told us that we should hide the name of it. We didn't move the ship, we didn't do anything like that, but there was a request from the White House. The president says he didn't know anything about it. There was denial for a while. But this weekend on Meet the Press, the president's acting chief of staff, White House chief of staff Mick Mulvaney, sat down with Chuck Todd, who pressed him and asked him, are you confident it's no one on your team that made the request to the Navy? Take a look.
Oh no, I absolutely believe it was probably somebody in the advance team.
It was on your team. Is there any consequences for this?
Look, I'll answer your question. An advance team is hundreds of people. You know this better. Yeah. You've been overseas as the President of the United States. The fact that some 23 or 24-year-old person on the advance team went to that site and said, oh my goodness, there's the John McCain. We all know how the president feels about the former senator. Maybe that's not the best backdrop. Can somebody look into moving it? That's not an unreasonable thing to
seriously?
Ask. It's not. And it's not an unreasonable thing.
It's not an unreasonable thing to ask. You saw that clip, what'd you think?
It's like the same. Wait, seriously?
Yeah, Chuck Todd.
Yeah.
Just like.
It's the same reaction I think everybody else is. Wait, it's not? Wait, what? Wait, you're.
So Mick Mulvaney, first of all, talking about an advance team, that's just the people that are responsible for going to a site where the president's going to be and saying, like, this is where we're going to set up, this is where everything's going to happen. But what Mick Mulvaney is saying is it's not unreasonable for a 23-year-old, first of all, that's kind of weird to be like these young idiots.
Exactly.
It's not us, the old guys in charge, it's the 23-year-old. It's not unreasonable for them to say, let's move the USS John McCain.
Right?
But the reason that that's not an unreasonable thing is because the president is unreasonable. That's the problem. That's what I have trouble with. Like, the president found out about Mick Mulvaney giving this talk on Meet the Press, and he was very mad. Here's our artist's rendering of how the president treated Mick Mulvaney. I'm sorry. It's just that Mick Mulvaney looks so much with his little glasses, like that guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark that has the little glasses. It's the same. Did he watch that movie and go like that? That's the glasses I'm getting because I have the same perfectly round head.
The way your brain works.
I would also like to thank the person, the fan.
Oh my gosh, I can't.
It's the same guy. We can make it so that we have the side by side of Mick Mulvaney in the video. But essentially, I want to do, and speaking of weird, I want to thank the viewer who sent John a nerd jar and me a weird jar. I don't know who it was. We'll have John clear it. He just put it on my desk. But essentially, when John's nerdy or I'm weird, we put a quarter in the nerd and weird jar. And I had to put a quarter in the weird jar today because you said, you literally said, this is so weird. But no, the interaction between Mulvaney and Chuck Todd continued. Here's the rest of it.
president's feelings towards the former senator are well known. They're well known throughout the office. They're well known in the media. But to think that you're going to get fired over this is silly. If you're going to a staff meeting and say, look, Chuck is fighting with so-and-so. Let's not sit them together today at the meeting. Is that a fireable offense at NBC? Goodness gracious, what kind of place are you folks running over here?
Well, that's not, but you're asking me something that doesn't happen. This happened here.
This has now gotten 2 minutes of time on Sunday afternoon.
It is.
And this is just outrageous.
All right.
It is.
It's more outrageous that it happened, not that you're talking about it. And guess what? In a professional setting, there should never be a discussion of these two aren't getting along. Let's just not sit them together. They're not getting along. Like that's not like there's no serious issue. They're just like that. This is what happens at daycare when you don't want the 2-year-old bad kid to bite the other one.
And one of them's dead.
Right.
One of these people died.
That is something else that I pointed out this morning. Like they keep referring to him as former senator. He was formerly alive. Like they keep I think that it makes the sentence worse. Like if someone says the late senator, like everyone knows, think about it, 2 sentences, right? I'm gonna give you one. Everyone knows how the president feels about the former senator. Everybody knows how the president feels about the late senator. The second one is weird.
Yes. Like, and listen, Warhawk or no Warhawk, I hope to God there is never a USS Donald Trump. But if there is, I wonder how many people will be like proud to serve on it.
This would be the Fred Trump also because this is
right.
Not even named after him.
It's now like, I think it originally was named after his
grandpa, right?
Grandpa. And then now I think it's him.
It's like
I don't remember.
Family, is that how it works? Okay.
But Patrick Shanahan, who's the acting defense secretary, said, our business is to run military operations and not become politicized. I would not have moved the ship. That is happening. There's also like these internal dramas and back and forth of people trying not to politicize the actual armed forces that I think is a really interesting discussion at this point because it's the confluence of an advance team who has to show up and be like, all right, let's not embarrass ourselves any more than we absolutely have to.
Right.
But in having to cover it up, he already lost this because he feels the need to cover it up. Because the president has lost his marbles. Anyways, we gotta go. When we come back, what are we talking about?
We're talking Kamala Harris. We've got a wild video to show you.
Yeah, creepy.
Yeah. And an executive decision we made over the weekend that I'm really proud about.
Yeah, find out about that after the break. That's a tease.
Yeah, a frightening moment for Senator and 2020 hopeful Kamala Harris this weekend in San Francisco at the Big Ideas Forum hosted by Move On. That's just a little bit of a clip. We have the full video. A lot happened. You're seeing like the aftermath of a protester basically coming in, essentially like attacking her, ran up on stage, grabbed the microphone for her. I think it was scary.
Yes, it was quite scary. It was not okay to do.
Right.
That moment when someone comes up on stage, you have to know that these people don't have like the kind of security detail that an official nominee will have. But just have someone come and run on the stage. Just I don't know what that must have been like in the moment of the people on stage at that time.
Yeah, let's show it to them. Let's show them the full video.
Of your first big idea on the gender pay gap. Not everyone works for a corporation.
Yes.
And a big
Hi.
Asking for your attention to a much bigger idea than
thank you so much, sir, for your big idea. But we want to make sure that we are able to get through this.
Her husband at the end who yanked the microphone with him. But this was crazy. And this is a member of a group, an animal rights organization. We've actually interviewed the head of this group about animal rights on The Conversation before. But a member of an animal rights group feeling like he wanted to take this moment and talk about why Democrats need to protect animals better. And there's a part of this that a lot of people are touching on and are talking about. And this guy who did this was asked by a reporter. So when asked by a reporter, after his removal, about whether he had considered how it would look beforehand for him to be taking away a microphone from a woman of color, The protester said, I did. I tried to show my profound respect for each of the people on stage, which is, I don't, it's a non-answer.
You didn't, didn't show any respect for the people on stage. And no matter who it is on, I mean, for me, I feel like no matter who it is on stage, the idea that you're saying I had great respect for the people who I disrespected.
Completely right.
Yeah, and I just that one woman who's in the middle who gets up and kind
Corinne,
of.
Corinne Jean-Paul, I think.
And she gets up to kind of run Jean-Pierre, interference. Sorry. She runs interference, but at that point, like all the things that must be going through your mind, like who is this guy? Does he seem threatening? I'm definitely terrified as he comes up, but he is wearing those toe shoes, you know, with the little individual toes or something.
Right.
And then at the end, you see her husband. That's from what reports say, that's her husband who yanks the microphone away.
Just to even I think I want to put it in a little bit more perspective about how terrifying this must have been. Kamala Harris is no stranger to death threats.
Yeah,
as I guess almost like essentially like the head of the prosecution.
Yeah, for sure.
In the state of California, a senator, a black woman in the U.S. Senate, she gets threatened.
And just like the idea that this guy at the very end had this thing in his mind where he was like. You know what? This went well.
Right.
He reached out to us, by the way, to try to get interviewed on this show. And you called me.
Yeah. Like, am I thinking wrong about, no, I don't think we should talk to him? And your answer immediately was absolutely not.
Yeah. It's difficult because like animal rights, I get it. And animal rights activists have a history of doing some pretty bold things. You know that PETA does... Well, has a history of like throwing blood on people who are wearing fur, or fake blood on people who are wearing fur and yelling fur is murder. They do things like they put out videos where people are naked to show like this is the skin and I'd rather go naked than wear fur. And that is effective in my mind more so than doing something like this, which is just, it's just so strange.
It was disrespectful. I think it was abusive. It was scary. And this is just not the place to give a platform to that.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I really wish that in times like these, people could take a moment before. And I know we all get caught up in our own personal purposes and our things that we're fighting for and that we're protests that we're involved in. But just take a look around. But I think that Kamala handled it as well as anyone could expect someone in that situation to handle it. She didn't, and I think she has more scrutiny potentially put on her than anybody else in that situation. Like if it's, say it's John Hickenlooper or something who comes up, you know, this guy was much taller and bigger than Kamala, but Kamala just kind of sat there and looked. Once she identified it wasn't gonna be like a huge physical threat, she got up and walked away. I mean, how did you think that she handled it?
Yeah, I think she looked scared to me. I would have been terrified. But she remained calm, got up, walked away, and then was willing to come back and continue her conversation with the audience who was there to hear her after, you know, such a what I thought looked like a scary situation.
Yep.
So I think she handled it very well. And I think it's unfortunate that she had to handle it.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough. There's a lot of things, especially like right now, we're kind of in like the doldrums of the candidacy for some people who are running for the Democratic nomination, just because like originally everybody announced and we saw so many announcements.
Right.
And it's just kind of going in this small lull. There was some news that was made, as we reported early on the show, with John Delaney and then also Cory Booker, and those were at different events. But now you're gonna see like until the debates start up, there's gonna be some time between now and then. When people are just more or less like, you're gonna see a bunch of weird stories like this where someone jumps on stage to try to take some attention away from Kamala Harris, who lately has been kind of announcing more policy proposals than she had before.
I also think, I wonder like what aspect of this, because we do know, I think you pointed out like the history of a lot of animal activists and how they protest, how some protest and the lines that sometimes are crossed. But I wonder how much, like when you have a president essentially like inciting behavior like this,
yeah,
how unsafe the campaign trail is about to get for a lot of people. And that scares me.
Yeah, we were talking about this earlier on the show. JR mentioned something. So I think this is gonna be reported later on the main show. So everybody should check it out.
Sounds good. We've got about 15 seconds.
God, I loved it.
Can you tell us a fun story in 8 seconds?
Okay, so when I was 7 years old.
Okay, 5 seconds.
I
all right,
was,
that's it. All right, yeah, we'll
I just
see tomorrow.
Had dreams.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.